This is the TTY Dialer, episode 28 for the week of May 8th through May 13th. Hi there, welcome to another edition of your weekly companion to WRVO's old-time radio show tuned to yesterday. I'm Mark Lavonier. Every night of the week on the air, we bring you Golden Age of Radio comedy, drama, mystery, action, suspense, western, science fiction, and much more, and online at WRVO.org. We also have a second stream of old-time radio on WRVO2, which you can listen to through our website. In this podcast, I bring you fun with sound from radio's past, a look at the shows coming up for the week, and radio history.
I think you ladies will all agree, a hostess' task of preparing a dinner or luncheon is a much more difficult one during the warm weather than in winter. Yes, hot weather can certainly play havoc with the best planned meals. Take butter, for instance. When you take that butter out of the refrigerator, in no time at all it begins to get soft and starts to melt. And that's true of all butter. But what about the taste? Ah, that's where Land O'Lakes sweet cream butter comes in. You see, unlike most butter churned from sour cream, only fresh sweet cream is ever used in churning Land O'Lakes. Then, even if the butter does get soft and melt, you don't get any sharp, strong taste, only the country flavor of fresh, sweet cream. That's why so many housewives prefer Land O'Lakes to any other butter. Just try it. Try it the very next time you order butter. Once you do, you'll never want to use any other. Ask your grocer for Land O'Lakes sweet cream butter.
That was a commercial for the sponsor of the Edgar A. Guest program from the five-month run of the show from January to May of 1941. It was on the air 3 days a week on NBC, which happened to have a very inviting introduction.
It takes a heap of living in the house to make it home, a heap of sun and shadow.
From the land of the sky.
Edgar Guest was one of the country's most popular and certainly best-known poets at the time, even though those who critiqued his work often referred to him as a verse writer. But whatever the case, his writing captured and interpreted the wide swath of what life has to offer and, of course, its possibilities and contemplations over the course of his 11,000 published poems, which were seen in some 300 newspapers in addition to many books and his appearances on the air. On radio, he maintained a series much like that Land O'Lakes show from the early 1930s with a mix of music and interviews with readings from his vast archive of work acting as sort of a glue in between segments. And it was a popular and pleasant way to spend time on the air with his rustic, even homespun delivery.
Don't you see the saddened eye of the human passerby? By his frowning, can't you tell things have not been going well? Hello, tulips in the sun. You are lovely, everyone, but I wonder why don't you wear a sad expression, too? Can it be you fail to see things aren't what they used to be?
In terms of the Land O'Lakes brand on the air, I can only find one other show that they supported, and their support happened to start the same year as the Edgar Guest program in 1941. It seems their radio advertising diminished greatly after the start of World War II, where Land O'Lakes was required by a federal order to set aside 30% of its butter for sale to the government. So what butter there was on sale during the period of rationing during World War II would have certainly flown off the shelves faster than a hot knife through... Okay. Coming up this Monday at 10 o'clock on Tuned to Yesterday, an hour of mystery with the adventures of Sherlock Holmes and Mr. and Mrs. North. Then it's Westerns. We have episodes of Gunsmoke at 11 and Tales of the Texas Rangers.
There's one thing sort of puzzles me a little, Sheriff.
What is it?
This new lock isn't rusty enough to have been out here in the open for very long.
What do you figure that means?
I won't know until I can get some idea of the approximate time of death. Come on, let's get back to town and start checking on Gilbert Madden. See if we can find out how long ago he was murdered.
This Tuesday evening, May 9th at 10 o'clock, comedy from Eddie Cantor's Wednesday with You show, then Jimmy Durante, followed by an hour of true history, a really compelling one at that. It's an open letter on race hatred, a powerful program from 1943. Then on the same topic, Lear with Orson Welles from 1946. Then a newscast from CBS radio commentator Elmer Davis. Here are these programs this Monday, May 8th and Tuesday, May 9th, live on the air from 10 to midnight, or live online at WRVO.org. This Thursday, May 11th, in 1946, one of the more famous radio game show hosts brought the program he created, Juvenile Jury, on the air to his station, WOR, in New York City. The stars on this show were kids, and having children on live radio is always a risky endeavor, especially without a script. But the host and creator, Jack Barry, thought it was possible after being inspired from a recording session he did for the children's program Uncle Don. Now, Juvenile Jury was often compared to the Quiz Kids radio show, which had a young panel of near geniuses answer well-researched or difficult questions. But Jack Barry formulated a show that would have more down-to-earth but well-spoken kids between the ages of 5 and 12, and they would answer questions posed and serve as a jury of their peers. And the results were so hilarious that just after 5 weeks, the Mutual Broadcasting System picked it up and aired it nationally. At the show's peak, around 5 million people were listening each Sunday afternoon, and it was among the first radio shows to make a transition into television, which set the stage for the show having the distinction of the first TV program with a commercial sponsorship, which was the General Foods Company, which produced the Gaines brand of dog food. And to weave the sponsor in on the radio show, they would wrap a commercial around the appearance of a mystery dog, which was brought in, and the kids were asked what breed it was. Just another in a series of questions for the juvenile jury, and here's some sound from one of their episodes, first broadcast in 1949.
Once again, our regular feature on Juvenile Jury, where we invite our younger listeners to present their problems in person. This week we have with us 4.5-year-old Joyce Donheiser of New York City, and Joyce is wearing a great big flower. Joyce, tell us what your problem is. What's your problem, Joyce?
Every night when I go to sleep, my brother cries. And should he sleep in my bed or no? Now my problem is, should he sleep in my bed or not?
You know, I think you need a bed right now. You look pretty tired. So your problem is whether or not your brother should sleep in your bed. Well, kid, you got some questions, Peggy?
Well, does he want to sleep in your bed?
Yes.
Well, why does he want to?
Why does he want to sleep in your bed, Joyce?
Because... I don't know.
He just likes to, huh? Well, I see. Yeah. Probably has a nice, comfortable bed. Yes, Peggy?
Well, where is he supposed to sleep? Where is he supposed to sleep?
In his crib.
Oh, that's it. He doesn't like to sleep in his crib. That explains
it. Yeah, why not?
Well, you know, a crib's uncomfortable, probably, Peggy. Dickie?
You have any other brothers?
Only one.
Well, you're lucky that he's not twins. Otherwise, if they both got in your bed, you'd feel like a sandwich.
And if I were between them, it would be a ham sandwich, yeah. Elizabeth?
How old is your brother?
2 years old.
Tell me, what do you want to be when you get older, Joyce?
What?
What do you want to be when you get older, when you grow up?
I want to be a dancer.
A dancer? Oh, uh-huh. And what did your daddy do?
He works in the hospital.
In the what?
In the hospital.
Oh, yeah, I know a surgeon that works there, too. Peggy, you have some more questions?
Well, if your brother would sleep in your bed, then where would you sleep?
I had a great big bed.
Oh.
The great big
both
bed.
Both could sleep in there.
Oh, you mean you sleep together?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, I see.
Johnny, did you have an important question to ask, I'm sure?
Well, why does her little brother want to go in a bed for no reason?
No.
He can't go in the bed for no reason. My mother tries to make me stay in my own bed.
For no reason.
Yes, for no reason, too, because I want to sleep in her bed, and she won't let me.
Why do you want to sleep in her bed for no reason?
Because it's more wider, and I like to spread my feet, and my bed isn't wide enough.
Peggy?
Well, you said that your brother cries. Why does he cry?
Because he wants to sleep in my bed.
Well, kids, let's take a run down here. Now, this little fellow wants to sleep in her bed, and she wants to find out whether you think he should or not. You think so, Johnny?
I think the little brother should learn to sleep in his own bed, because that's what I have to try to do now, too.
Yeah, and for no reason,
either.
She's
going to try to force me now when she, after all that she heard, to see a problem. Now sure. I know that she's going to force me.
I can see now why you got that wonderful telegram from Mayor John Kenney over in Jersey City congratulating you on your work here on the program. For all these wonderful answers you give for no reason, Johnny. Peggy?
Well, your mother should get your brother a big bed just like your own, and then not only will he have a night's sleep, but the rest of your family will get a night's sleep.
Say, tell me, Joyce, are you interested here? Joyce is looking way out in the audience. I think Charlie Hankinson's got a good answer for you. You listen to him, Joyce. Do you think that her brother should sleep in the bed or not, Charlie?
You know, when your brother goes into bed, then at night, you know, you lose a lot of sleep. And you know, before you know it, you'll get bags under your eyes, and you'll look like an old hag.
Well, then maybe she could replace Fred Allen for next year. He's got a few bags himself. Elizabeth?
I think he should learn to sleep in his own bed.
All right, what do you think, Dickie?
Well, you see, well, I don't think that he should sleep in your bed either, because it's too crowded. Because your mother might get all mixed up and stick the bottle in your mouth instead of him. She might change you instead of changing him.
The whole thing might be very confusing. So if you do have enough room to be comfortable and you want to do it, Joyce, perhaps you could let your little brother stay with you for a little while until he gets sleepy, and then your mother could move him back to his own bed. Thank you so much for being with us, Joyce Sonheiser.
On Tune 2 Yesterday, this Wednesday night, May 10th at 10 o'clock, an hour of science fiction from broadcasts of Suspense and X-1. Then it's Crime from a relatively rare broadcast of Mark Saber of the Homicide Squad and another episode of Suspense from 1945. On this Thursday night, May 11th at 10, we have drama for you from Rogers of the Gazette and the Damon Runyon Theater.
You are now looking at the guy who holds the heavyweight championship for the shortest time in history.
Leave us go.
Yes, leave us go for the home-cooked meal.
Wait. Jonas, look, you're broke.
Yes? Now you are doing it.
Jonas, is that right? You do not have any scratch money?
That is right. And I find this somewhat necessary.
Then tell you what, we will talk in the cab. And I think I have a proposition that will interest you.
After that, at 11, horror from The Witch's Tale. And yet another episode of Suspense. You can hear these programs on Tune 2 Yesterday from 10 to midnight on the air on WRVO, Wednesday, May 10th and Thursday, May 11th, either live or at WRVO.org. When boxer Muhammad Ali says of another fighter, "I just give lip service to being the greatest, he was the greatest," I know he means it. And to boxing fans, there's little doubt about who he's talking about. The Brown Bomber, Joe Louis, was born this Saturday, May 13th, in Lafayette, Alabama, in 1914, and would not only go on to become the heavyweight boxing champion of the world, but also become one of the most listened-to athletes on radio, of course, talking mostly with his fists. Closing with a 68-3 record with 54 knockouts and 11 years of fights, Joe Louis was really a feared opponent, whose style was heavy hits followed by quick bursts of punches, and as boxer Max Baer put it, "He hit me 18 times while I was in the act of falling." On the air, the play-by-play for his matches was so popular that four of them landed into the most listened-to broadcasts of the 1930s, the top one being the fight against German boxer Max Schmeling. It was their first meeting on June 19, 1936, and the then-only once-defeated Louis was knocked out at Yankee Stadium by Schmeling. And given the year and political climate at the time, it came as no surprise that Germany's Minister of Propaganda, Joseph Goebbels, referred to the win as a triumph for Germany and Hitlerism. Even the Nazi Weekly Journal commented that Schmeling's victory was not only sport, but a question of prestige for our race. So there was more than just tension or the lure of two heavyweights in a match on the night of June 22, 1938, where over 63 million listeners the world over were tuned in to the rematch of Louis and Schmeling. There was national and personal pride at stake, particularly for Louis, who in some ways was able to transcend living in a country where racism could run rampant, to be the great hope the country looked to represent the nation in the ring against the backdrop of a hostile political climate. And it didn't take him long to make good. In one round, 124 seconds to be exact, Schmeling hit the canvas and lost by TKO.
Right and left to the head, a left to the jaw, a right to the head, and Donovan is watching carefully. Lewis measured him, right to the body, a left up to the jaw, and Schmeling is down. The count is 5, 5, 6, 7, 8. The men are in the ring. The fight is over on a technical knockout. Max Schmeling is beaten in one round.
Three time, 2 minutes, 4 seconds. First round, referee stops it. The winner and still champion, Joe Lewis.
Here's Joe Lewis right after the fight.
I waited 2 years for the revenge, and now I got it.
This is the fight that's been called the Battle of the Century, making Joe Lewis a legend in his own time. And on radio, he was celebrated at every turn, from the dedicated airtime to his fights to guest appearances on programs like The Jack Benny Show.
Now, Joe, let's get down to business. You know, it's been rumored around you'd like to be a big comedian.
That's right. I want to make people laugh. I've been wanting to do that for years.
Well, Joe, if you want to make people laugh, you've been going about it the wrong way.
Who told you that?
Max Schmeling, Tony Galanto, Jim Bagg, and Buddy Bagg. That's who.
Well, them fellas have no sense of humor.
Well, you know, it's pretty hard to laugh with a referee counting over you.
I wouldn't know. That never happened to me.
Never?
Never.
Joe, remember that first fight you had with Max Schmeling?
Mm-hmm.
What happened in the 12th round? What happened?
That's the one page I tore out of my scrapbook.
There was even a dramatization of his life on the African-American civil rights-themed program Destination Freedom in 1942.
The wizard took Joe Lewis under his wing and showed him the science of the shuffle and the jab, the weave and the bob, the craft of the right cross and the left hook and the art of the uppercut. And then out of the sweat of the gym, he came punching like a piston. And the promoters called...
The winner by a knockout in the second round... Joe Lewis!
And here's his first radio appearance ever on Rudy Valley's variety program, The Fleischman Yeast Hour, in 1939. Now, early on in this interview, the way African Americans were generally treated on the air is sort of evident from Valley when he refers to Joe Lewis's family as your people, which in a segregated state wasn't unheard of, but not the way that question would be phrased today. Even one of the most famous athletes in the world had to deal with this for a good part of his life. But as sports writer Johnny Cannon put it, he was a credit to his race, the human race.
We had a very difficult time persuading Joe Lewis that he ought to make an appearance here tonight. He is one of the most modest, shy, and retiring young men I have ever met. Mr. Valley says, I'm scared. I'd rather fight Mr. Canary again than talk to all those people. However, we have persuaded him to answer a few questions about himself. This is his first public appearance since Tuesday night. The Brown Bomber, Joe Lewis. Joe, I think perhaps our audience would like to know more about your early background. Let's begin at the beginning. Where were you born?
In Lafayette, Alabama, Mr. Valley. That's near the capital in Montgomery.
Your people were quite poor, weren't they?
Very poor, Mr. Valley. My father worked in the cotton field. He died when I was 2 years old.
Did you have any brothers or sisters?
Yes, sir. 3 brothers and 4 sisters.
So your mother was left alone with 8 children to support.
Yes, sir. We had a pretty hard time in Alabama. After a little while, we moved to Detroit.
What was your first job, Joe?
I worked on an ice wagon after school when I was 12 years old.
And I guess that's where you got those shoulder muscles. When did you leave school?
I was 14. I left grammar school and went to a trade school to learn cabinet making.
How did you happen to start boxing?
A friend of mine in trade school gave me boxing lessons, then I went into an amateur tournament.
How many fights have you had since then?
72, Mr. Valley.
Did you win them all?
No, sir. When I won an amateur, I lost 4 out of 54.
How many knockouts have you scored?
62 out of 77.
Well, that's an amazing record. Do you think you'll win the championship?
Yes, sir. I certainly do.
Something tells me that you're right. I hear you go to church every Sunday and read the Bible every day. Is that right?
Yes, sir, I do.
What are your plans now?
I want another fight. I want to be champ as soon as I can.
We'll consider that a formal challenge to Messrs. Bear, Schmeling, and Braddock. What would you like to do right now?
I'd like to go somewhere else and stop my knee from rattling together.
Okay, Joe, our congratulations. We think you're a man your people can be proud of. And we extend our best wishes for your future.
Thank you, Mr. Valet.
By the way, boxer Max Schmeling was against the idea of Nazism and the party and would end up befriending Joe Louis after the war and even helped pay for his funeral after he passed away in 1981. Coming up this Friday night on Tune to Yesterday, it's sitcoms from The Great Gildersleeve and Ozzie and Harriet. Then it's Adventure with Moby Dick adapted on the Tell It Again series and Escape from 1950. This Saturday night, May 13th at 10 o'clock, it's an hour of horror. Broadcasts of Inner Sanctum and Lights Out.
I could see her with my own eyes. And yet she was dead, I tell you, dead. Jay didn't know that, no. He took that dead thing by the arm, and he led her into the room. And he sat her down in a chair.
Oh, Mama, Mama, you did come back. I knew you would. We both knew it, didn't we, Ella? Now tell us, Mama, where you been? Why'd you go? Yeah, why come back this funny way? The back way up the basement steps. Why, Mama?
At 11 o'clock this Saturday night, it's Variety from the Radio Hall of Fame from 1944. You can hear these shows Friday, May 12th and Saturday, May 13th from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday. Now, last week, I asked my podcast listeners to write me and tell me what their top three shows would be if you found yourself on a desert island with no other entertainment. And either people didn't listen to the tail end of last week's podcast or didn't have time this week, but there weren't any takers. I'm actually planning a listener-themed evening, so I would love to hear from you this week with your top three favorite radio shows. Even particular episodes work as well. Just email me, mark@wrvo.org. That's mark@wrvo.org. Tune to Yesterday is on from 10 to midnight every night of the week on the air and online. So I hope you enjoy the shows this week, and I'll be back next week with another TTY Dialer.